BBC News with Marion Marshall. Three bombs have gone off in India's main commercial city, Mumbai. One exploded in the heart of the city and two others in the south. All the blasts were in crowded areas during the rush hour. India's Home Minister said at least 10 people had died and more than 50 were injured. Indian officials said it seemed to be a coordinated terrorist attack. Our correspondent in Mumbai, Rajini Vaidyanathan, says the final casualty figure could rise substantially.
This city is crowded at the best of times, but especially crowded and congested during the evening hours around 7 p.m. One of the blasts went off in a jewellery shop in the Zaveri Bazaar district. Now, that is a very, very busy shopping area. It is very difficult to navigate the streets there, even in the afternoon, let alone in the rush hour. So one can only imagine, given the time of day and the locations which were particularly crowded, that those figures could climb much, much higher.
Rupert Murdoch's media group, News Corp, has withdrawn its controversial bid for a full takeover of the British broadcaster, BSkyB. His British newspapers have been engulfed in a corruption and phone-hacking scandal that's led to the closure of the paper, The News of the World. The announcement came shortly before the British Parliament began debating the unpopular takeover. The BBC's business editor is Robert Peston.
Rupert Murdoch faced this very stark decision. Should he press ahead against the revealed will of Parliament, or do the thing which he will have hated doing, because he really, more than anything else in terms of his current global corporate ambitions, he was desperate to get control of BSkyB. He feels he created it. It's a hugely profitable and growing business, and he wanted access to all that cash. And so it will be incredibly painful for him to have had to abandon that ambition. Certainly, I think for the foreseeable future, this deal is off.
The Egyptian government says more than 600 senior police officers are being removed from their jobs. Their dismissal has been a key demand of protesters, who believe the officers were involved in the killing of hundreds of people during the uprising against Mr. Mubarak earlier this year. From Cairo, John Lyne reports.
With protests in Tahrir Square being stepped up daily, the Interior Ministry has announced a major purge of officers. 505 generals and 160 other officers are to end their service. According to the Interior Minister, 18 of the generals are accused of having a role in the killing of protesters during the revolution earlier this year. It's not been specified whether the officers are being sacked or just retired early.
In another development, the army has told reporters that the parliamentary elections scheduled for September will now be delayed for at least a month. Five French members of the NATO-led military force in northeast Afghanistan have been killed by a suicide bomber. An Afghan civilian also died in the attack, and several others were severely wounded. You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Marengo Carpet Update, serving the Dane County area with non-toxic carpet and upholstery cleaning since 1990. Dave Wilshire at 258-9004 for estimates and information.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Willie Street Co-op, with locations in Madison and Middleton, offering daily lunch options, including a salad bar, soups, hot entrees, prepared salads, made-to-order sandwiches. Menus and information available at willystreet.coop.
6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by.
And good afternoon and welcome to A Public Affair. My name is Joanne Powers. I'm subbing today on the program. And today, my guests are going to be Lisa Graves, Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy, and Mary Botari, the Director of the Real Economy Project, also part of the Center for Media and Democracy. Our topic is going to be, it's going to be exposing our corporate masters here on a public affair this afternoon. We're going to be talking about the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. And welcome to the program, the two of you.
Thank you for having us.
I suppose we should start out by getting a little background on what ALEC is for our listeners who are unfamiliar, and you can talk about your new website, ALEC Exposed, it's a story that we are breaking here because this is, going out in a couple of different media media rollouts right now as we speak. But and I should also mention to our listeners, it is a call-in program. So 256-2001 if you'd like to join our conversation. Lisa, if you can start giving us a little background on ALEC and what it is and why we should care.
Sure. Well, we are very pleased to be helping to break this story through WART and to WART listeners. The Center for Media Democracy was founded in Madison in 1993, and we have three websites, prwatch.org, sourcewatch.org, and banksterusa.org. And today, we are announcing the launch of a brand new resource for reporters and activists to help uncover the extent of collusion between corporations and politicians, in particular state politicians and corporations, to advance really a radical corporate agenda to rewrite our laws in every area of the law. And so we have a brand new website that we're asking you to go to read, to look at bills that we have exposed today. That website is called ALEC, A-L-E-C, Exposed, all one word, alecexposed.org. ALEC Exposed is about an organization that you may have heard of. We saw signs at the Wisconsin protests asking about ALEC. ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is an organization that describes itself as the premier, largest organization group of state legislators in the country. They claim they've got over 2,000 legislators, including many legislators you've heard of. Legislators like Scott Fitzgerald, the leading senator, the Republican senator in the state house here. An alum of ALEC, whom you may have heard of, is Scott Walker. Other alums of ALEC include Mike Hibsch, who's now at the Department of Administration here.
I've heard all of these names.
You've sort of heard these names. And so this is a very influential group that is in the alumni of ALEC. And ALEC, in fact, is an organization that produces a number of tools, in essence, to advance this corporate agenda. One of the things that they have produced, in essence, are model bills. You may have heard of some of these pieces of legislation. Mary and I are going to talk with you a little bit about those, Joanne, today, and the listeners. But what I would emphasize about the trove of documents, over 800 bills that we have marked up and analyzed and revealed to the public today for the first time, is that these bills were voted on before they were introduced in legislatures across the country for the most part. These are bills that corporations actually voted in favor of behind closed doors.
And wrote.
And wrote these bills behind closed doors. Legislators voted with them, alongside them, in favor of these pieces of legislation. And then the bills were laundered and introduced in state houses across the country, including the Capitol just up the hill from here. And in those state houses, not a mention was made of the fact that this bill or that provision had been pre-approved, pre-voted on by major corporations, including, of course, corporations like Koch Industries.
Now, of course, most of this legislation you're talking about, which is being introduced in states across the country and at the national level as well, is mostly focused on things like dismantling the social safety net and doing other things that that tend to support the corporate line there. Now, obviously, we expect this from the right and most of what the United States would mistakenly call the left. But can you talk a little bit about why this is important to the Center for Media and Democracy, a group that that basically works on exposing, you know, bias and slant that is built into our and propaganda that is built into our media system?
Well, our mission is to help expose corporate spin and government propaganda, and this is, in essence, the perfect, or in fact, most imperfect, in a way, marriage of them both.
Two great tastes that taste great together.
To some, apparently, to the corporations that actually bankroll over 98% of ALEC's funding, the corporations in ALEC, corporate foundations, corporate trade associations, and other sources of revenue for ALEC count for more than 98% of the money that makes ALEC run. Legislative dues by people like Scott Walker or others account for less than 2% of the funding for this organization. This organization has posh retreats They're having one in 2 weeks in New Orleans, at which legislators are wined and dined and hang out and rub elbows with captains of industry and their lobbyists, people who may become big campaign contributors to these legislators. And then they come back to their states and introduce legislation that was pre-approved in these sessions. And so this is a really significant breakthrough to be able to trace for the first time these bills from not just what you see happening in the State House, but be able to trace them back to when they were passed and, in essence, which corporations right now are in the leadership of ALEC to be able to hold them to account. It's not just Koch Industries. It's companies like Kraft Foods. It's companies like Coca-Cola. They don't all have unblemished records, but it may surprise people to know that the agenda to privatize public education, the agenda to undermine, in essence, destroy worker rights, efforts to limit the rules for Americans who are injured or killed by corporations, give enormous tax write-offs to corporations.
Privatize prisons, privatize Social Security.
Yes, it's the whole agenda. And
maintain the current capitalist healthcare system.
Indeed, they are very active in maintaining the current healthcare system, and they have pharmaceutical companies and others on board. And so we think that this is very important to expose, because there's a lot of talk, especially after the terrible Citizens United decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, by five guys in the majority on that court, to allow expanded corporate influence in our elections. This is a process through ALEC that once those elections take place, legislators around the country are poised to be introducing provisions that have basically been pre-approved by their corporate benefactors, by their corporate masters. They act as ventriloquists to throw their voice through many of these legislators.
And I should remind our listeners that this is a call-in program. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you have questions or comments, give us a call at 256-2001. My name is Joanne Powers. My guests are Lisa Graves and Mary Botari, both of the Center for Media and Democracy. We're talking about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the trouble they've been causing, as it were. We'll get in a little bit to how it's directly affected Wisconsin, but I should probably ask about the going back to the whole propaganda angle behind this. A lot of these bills and the right-wing agenda, as it were, is being presented, is it not, as a groundswell of grassroots pushing for destroying the lives of basic ordinary Americans?
You're exactly right. And what we've seen here is sort of the confluence of a number of instruments that billionaires like David and Charles Koch and others have put together, an infrastructure by which one organization by the name of ALEC develops and promotes this model legislation. Basically, the corporations in ALEC develop and promote this. The politicians go along with it, bring them back to their state houses. Meanwhile, other institutions developed and funded by the Koch brothers and others, like Americans for Prosperity, and Wisconsin for Prosperity, the group here, the AFP group here that has been aiding and assisting the Tea Party, come back with all this propaganda that's been created, talking points about labor
and pensions.
And the Club for Growth. And the Club for Growth. A whole set of groups that have basically been pushed down into the states to have a state presence and have the appearance of having a groundswell. Are being armed, in essence, with information by this set of groups in this infrastructure.
Well, with disinformation.
Right. No, you're exactly right. Disinformation. I shouldn't even credit it so much. And then as everyone who's, I'm sure, listening knows and has seen, they get disproportionate coverage in the media. Meanwhile, protests that are genuine grassroots swell of people, hundreds of thousands of people, counting into the millions of people ultimately through the Wisconsin protests, get very little coverage, relatively speaking, compared to the very small groups that have emerged to call for these radical revisions of our labor laws, the effort to privatize prisons, the effort to privatize our public assets. All of these maneuvers are echoed in many respects in these ALEC exposed bills.
And that does bring us back to something very dear to the Center of Media and Democracy, is the fact that the media is largely consolidated and controlled by a small group of people who, strangely enough, are not poor people. And the echo chamber, as the folks at Brave New World Film or Brave New Video, I believe they call themselves, referred to it, in which the they have this groundswell of, oh, we have our front groups here, then our front groups there, but then they have their media monkeys that will, echo those talking points, and then they have the politicians that will echo those talking points. And do you want to comment on the role of the media in this?
Well, certainly, and that's one of the things that we cover quite a bit.
It's right there in your name.
It's in our name, the Center for Media and Democracy, and through our flagship website, prwatch.org, we track information in the media, how things are being covered in the media, distortions in the media. It's actually an enormous task to keep track of all that because, as you all know, there's tremendous disinformation coming from the commercial corporate media. And it'll be interesting to see how the corporate media actually covers this story, which outlets pick it up, which television stations or others might pick it up and actually talk about the fact that we have documents through this whistleblower that we've now made public, in which Alec talks about corporations having, quote, a voice and a vote. I think it's significant.
$1, one vote.
I think it might be more than one. Yeah, exactly, more than $1. And in fact, what you see is these politicians, some of them other grassroots, other people have exposed here in Wisconsin, some of these legislators don't even pay their own dues. Some of their efforts are paid for by taxpayers to participate in ALEC. And meanwhile, corporations are paying tens of thousands of dollars to participate in ALEC and have a, quote, equal vote, in essence, with these politicians on bills that are basically wrecking our country.
All right, and we can get to a little bit more later about those those bills and their origin and the cut and paste manner in which they're produced. But I want to talk a little bit about Wisconsin. If Mary wants to get a little closer to her microphone, I know she wants to talk a little bit about the role that that this organization has played in Wisconsin's current fiscal regressivism, or whatever you want to call it.
Something like that. Well, Alec has been deeply involved in the state of Wisconsin going all the way back to the days of Tommy Thompson when he was a state legislator in the 1970s and 1980s. He would go to ALEC meetings and he gave an interview in which he said he'd take their great ideas and polish them up a little and take them home and introduce them as his own ideas and nobody would know the difference.
Is that where we got welfare reform?
I think this history needs to be written now that we have these bills. So this history has not been written. I mean, it has clearly been a very big agenda item for this particular organization. School choice has been the biggest agenda item. And Tommy Thompson, they have publications on school choice coming, as early as the early 1980s.
Well, there's not enough profit being made in public education right now.
It's based on ideas of Milton Friedman. And yet, when school choice was implemented here in Wisconsin in 1990, there was no discussion of the role of ALEC. And so now by looking at these bills, we can rebuild the history. Looking at the bills today, ALEC is ALEC's top priorities are items like, let's see, voter ID. Does that sound familiar to Wisconsinites?
That sounds very familiar.
Radical immigration proposals. Do those sound familiar to Wisconsinites? Concealed carry. Have we heard of that one? All sorts of health care rollbacks, all sorts of school choice bills. The National Beer Wholesalers Association sits on the board of ALEC. I mean, are they on the board?
They've been on the board.
They've been on the board, and Miller is a member of ALEC. R. Miller. So this attack on small brewers might have here in Wisconsin might have its roots in ALEC, the list goes on and on.
Well, it's interesting to note that obviously some of those are purely pro-capitalist model ideas, let's get rid of labor rights, let's get rid of, let's privatize everything and make more money, let's keep people from getting health care because right now we're making a killing off of it, quite literally. But a couple of those things like voter ID, obviously there is, not an issue of profit being made there, that's for purely political expediency, is it not?
No, that's right. I think a number of these agenda items are more ideological than others. But even in the ideological areas like school choice, corporations are now moving in to the space that's been created, right? So the co-chair of the ALEX Committee on Education is Connections Academy, which is a for-profit online.
That sounds very exciting.
Doesn't sound like you want to go.
Academy.
A for-profit online service provider who's, you know.
Do they have school uniforms?
I don't think they do on that. Mm. But they, you know, whose vision of appropriate education is all the kids sitting at home and one teacher over at School Academy teaching masses of children who on online choice schools, you know, this kind of thing. So in the nation today, Dr. Julie Underwood, who's a professor here at the University of Wisconsin, who's the dean of the School of Education, has a large article on the privatization agenda, the out and out privatize the whole thing agenda behind ALEX's sweep of bills in this area.
All right. And we do have, I believe, a couple of people on the phone line. We're going to go to the first one now. Go ahead, caller. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, you know, I'm still scratching my head over this last election that Wisconsin had a law in place that was not enforced regarding full disclosure. Okay, the barn door has been thrown open. I don't think you're going to get it closed again. But the one thing that could make all this moot would be the enforcement of a simple law that was in place saying every single ad carries the price tag and who paid it. It's called full disclosure. They get away with bombarding people senselessly, anonymously, and we had the law in place, and the Government Accountability Board and some judge, you know, circumvented it, and nobody says anything.
Well, thank you, caller. Well, any response to that?
Sure. I'd respond to a couple of those things. One is that, you know, we certainly favor broader disclosure at the Center for Media and Democracy. And we, in fact, have filed a brief before the Wisconsin Supreme Court in a case that involves groups like Americans for Prosperity and others that are trying to stop Wisconsin's open government rules on disclosure of regarding election ads or ads during the time of election, ads that are so-called issue ads to influence elections. With respect to ALEC, we don't have any example of them running, you know, an election ad. But I think that the larger point is this notion of what's happening behind closed doors.
They just run groups that run election ads.
No, I mean, what they actually do is they make the legislators their super lobbyist in the legislature. And so when you have that kind of deputizing going on, where you have corporations behind closed doors voting on bills with legislators who are voting on those bills in their own name, in essence, and then going back to the states to introduce those bills, that's a whole different level of operation than running ads to influence the rest of us. This is direct influence on politicians who have positions of leadership and responsibility to the public through their offices. And in that capacity, they are taking bills, voting on them, not telling you that they have already voted on these things beforehand, that not telling you that they already voted on them with corporations, that corporations voted for them, and coming back to our state house and state houses across the country and passing them off as their own idea. I think that it's incredibly corrupting. In my view, in my personal opinion, this sort of institutionalization of this access of lobbyists to members through these ALEC task forces, through these posh conventions, it certainly institutionalizes a kind of corruption that is deeply troubling, that in fact is really a disease that has infected our democracy. And we should all be very worried about what ALEC is doing, what ALEC legislators and ALEC corporations are trying to do to our country.
And, of course, a lot of this does go back to the Citizens United decision that we mentioned earlier, which is the reason that corporations can dump unlimited amounts of money into these campaigns by creating a front group to run their advertisement called, you know, Americans Against Killing Your Parents or something like that, and then trying to convince people that, you know, they should get rid of health care.
Well, and I think that it is the case, and we certainly have exposed a number of front groups, in particular some that have been active in the trying to influence the Wisconsin protest protests here, and the controversy, the reaction, the people's response to Scott Walker's radical agenda. We have exposed some of these groups as groups, for example, that operate out of a post office box. We've helped expose groups that have names like the League of American Voters, and they're doing robocalls in Wisconsin that have one employee. It's quite a league of American Voter. Or maybe there's two of them between the head of that and Dick Morris of Fox News. But in essence, we've been exposing these groups. Alec is a different creature, as Mary has remarked to me. Alec's more than a front group. It's much more powerful than that. Because a front group that's out there, in essence, putting ads out and misleading the American people, putting disinformation out, that's extremely worrisome, extremely troubling. But when a group like this is basically helping to put in the hands of these legislators bills pre-voted on by corporations and voted on by legislators without telling you, that's a whole different kind of problem.
And also they act more clandestinely in that they don't... They don't put out advertisements that say, from the American Legislative Exchange Council. They work behind the scenes. And so, you know, they're not quite, obviously, there's a certain similarity in using the American Legislative Exchange Council instead of saying, hi, we're ExxonMobil and Philip Morris and the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. And we, you know, we're introducing this, this disinformation, but it's not a front group in the sense that they're not out there publicly. They're working clandestinely to influence our government.
Well, and I would say I think that those are some great points, Joanne, because the fact is that they are very secretive. They do have a presence in the world that's public. In fact, during the debate, the public debate over Walker's efforts on to undermine the pensions of workers who had negotiated for those rights, sacrificed for those rights.
Oh, I've heard about that. Was there a debate?
There was reporting in Wisconsin talking about Alec's role. And Alec itself denied that it had any role. It said that they didn't send anybody to Wisconsin, that they weren't lobbying themselves on the bills by Scott Walker. Instead, of course, what Alec did was it had its point person go on Judy Woodruff on the NewsHour and pitch its propaganda message, its disinformation message about taxes and revenue and budgets and pensions and Wisconsin's pension plan. And so they operate in a different way, but it's part of a larger sort of infrastructure that's in place to push these ideas along and make radical ideas a reality.
Well, they also work outside of the propaganda sphere, and they have all their pet politicians who, you know, will do their bidding as well. We do have another caller. Go ahead, caller.
Thank you. Earlier, your guest mentioned what would the major media do with this information that her organization has uncovered. I believe it was 3 years ago, approximately, on one of the networks, there was an expose done, and I don't remember them mentioning Alec by name, but they had a conference, and I believe it was in New Orleans, you know, great party town, and the reporters followed. They had different events at a number of places, mostly clubs, and there would be a placard outside and listing the sponsors, like Sony and, Toyota and whoever, large corporations. And they were pretty careful about keeping anybody with a camera out. So they did some hidden camera stuff. And the tie-in with the report was that there had been a number, and I believe the number was upward of 80 state legislators around the country who had been prosecuted for corruption, bribery, et cetera, in connection apparently with, you know, this organization. And that's the angle that they were working. Now, I don't know if your guest has any information if that was Alec. It's certainly the way she's describing what they're, you know, what they do and how they operate. It certainly sounds like it was Alec. And if she, you know, I don't remember seeing any other follow-ups in network news, but perhaps your guest has some comments. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. We're actually going to look into the story you've just mentioned to us just now. We don't have any information that Alec politicians have been part of a criminal investigation or anything of that nature. And so that may very well have been a different sort of group, but a group of corporations and politicians coming together in other ways. But it is the case that in ALEC conventions and such, that there is corporate sponsorship of events, parties, wine and cheese parties or cigar parties or skeet shoots.
That's been happening for a long time.
It's been happening for a long time. It's part of the way that corporations, in essence, try to lubricate the legislators to help them to build these bonds with them. But I do think that in this instance, what we see is corporations and groups that you might not think would be involved in these activities involved. So, for example, we know that until just recently, the NRA, the National Rifle Association, was the co-chair of the ALEC Task Force on Public Safety and Elections. What that means is that the NRA was the co-chair, and it was for a number of years, of the part of ALEC that was rewriting our election laws, our democracy laws. And I think that people should wonder what is the NRA's interest in those voter bills and such. I think when you look at Kraft Foods being the co-chair of one of these committees, these task force of ALEC, we should be thinking, well, what is Kraft Foods' interest in privatizing our schools or our unions? And beyond that, for the whole set of corporations that are involved in ALEC, there are really astonishing bills and proposals in this pack of legislation. It's not just the anti-climate change agenda and, as you said, things you might expect. There are even provisions in there to roll back no-fault divorce. There's an array of social policy.
How 1940s.
Exactly. There's an array of social policy issues that these corporations have gone along with as part of ALEC. And we think that questions need to be asked of these companies, what they're doing supporting, bankrolling this radical agenda. And I think consumers have choices
to
make.
As a radical, I should point out that it's a reactionary
agenda. Oh, right. It is a reactionary agenda. Sorry about that. I would describe it as an agenda in my research that has roots and seeds in people that have been involved in pretty extraordinary extreme agendas for a long time. So, not to digress too much, but David Koch and Charles Koch, their father was on the National Council for the John Birch Society. He wrote these tirades against saying that there were communists and socialists everywhere, saying that the NEA was infiltrated by communists, saying that the Supreme Court was a communist instrument.
If only.
Saying that Roosevelt and Eisenhower were sympathetic to communists. And he, this was their father. And some men might rebel. Others might spend their life investing in reshaping and amplifying ideas of their father and basically making them more palatable to the rest of us. So David Koch, who is one of the two leaders of Koch Industries, when he ran for vice president in 1980 to the right of Ronald Reagan, one of the main campaign platforms was privatizing public education. They helped put that as on the agenda. And then a group like ALEC takes it up. And interestingly, ALEC, of course, rewards the Koch brothers by giving them their Adam Smith Free Enterprise Award. Now, Adam Smith did say that basically the equivalent of greed is good, as Oliver Stone put it in Fiction. But Adam Smith, the economist, also said that the people that you should be most skeptical about trying to rewrite our laws are businessmen. Are people in business, because their agenda is not the same as ordinary people, and they seek to enrich themselves and use their wealth to enrich themselves further at the expense of the rest of us. And so we have put that material.
I for one am shocked.
We've put that material online at PR Watch and also at ALEC Exposed. But also that's one of the stories that's covered in the nation's breaking news today is on the Koch brothers, and as Mary said, on Julie's piece on education and Joel's piece and others that really go into some detail on this agenda and its roots and implications.
And we do have another, I believe, two callers on the line. We're going to go to the next one now. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. Well, as you described it, this is really a blitz on every front so that there won't be anywhere for the average person to turn. There's, you know, the broadcasting of pseudo-economics all over the American media. It's even spread to BBC. Get politicians to ignore antitrust laws, destroy your small communities in every way possible, give big banks a huge bailout, and refuse to give any help to community banks, get credit unions converted to banks very easily. It's all, you know, almost everything that's happened over the last 15 years especially has tended this way. But I had two questions, and one is, NPR could actually, or not just NPR, but, you know, National Public Broadcasting could be doing a good job, but instead, you know, in the name of total balance, you know, pro and con, as you said, like Judy Woodruff, gives these guys airing. And so what is NPR and public television seems to be doing a little better, at least in Wisconsin, but I think they could, NPR is part of the problem. I think they've got a really bizarre philosophy. And second, what rewards do errand boys like the Republican governors of a number of states now, including as well as our own Michigan and Florida and you name it, what rewards do these guys get? Do they get a promise of eternal life, or what kinds of financial and power rewards are they promised by these groups?
Thank you, caller.
Well, we couldn't agree more about the sort of depressing economics agenda of these types of organizations, and specifically with ALEC, the agenda is really clear in these sets of bills. Professor Joel Rogers and Laura Dresser from the Center on Wisconsin Strategy did a great piece for The Nation where they outline the sweep of taxation bills that are all geared towards slashing government, squeezing it down to a tiny size, and possibly getting rid of it altogether.
Wasn't it Reagan that said he wanted to drown it in a bath?
Grover Norquist, but
oh,
I'm sure Reagan agreed. I'm sure Reagan agreed. And then there's an array of attacks on unions and on teachers' unions that are very specific. There's not just paycheck protection legislation. There's like 10 different ways to defund unions and drown them in a bathtub as well. There's 10 different ways to defund trial lawyers as well.
I think they've applied most of those in Wisconsin.
They have applied most of those in Wisconsin. So circling back around to Wisconsin, we did pass a tort reform bill. It was one of the first bills signed by the governor that has a series of ALEC bills rolled into it. We did pass a collective bargaining bill, as everyone recalls.
As I recall, it was an anti-collective bargaining.
That was not a per se ALEC bill. Our collective bargaining bill our collective bargaining law is very complicated. It's 50 years old, and so ALEC does not have 400-page model bills. Right, they have 2-page model bills, but some of the elements of their bills are in our bill, particularly the element of prohibiting the state from collecting union dues, which
is apparently the element of surprise, according to how some people reacted.
There you go. But here in Wisconsin, you know, we are one of the premier stomping grounds of this whole effort. Scott Walker was an ALEC member from 1993 to 2002. He proudly displayed it in his blue book. Scott Fitzgerald, the head of the Senate, was their state chairman for years and years. Jeff Fitzgerald is an ALEC member. The majority leader in the House, Representative Souter, is an ALEC member. Hipsch, former legislator who's now Secretary of the Administration, is an ALEC member. And so is Leah Vukmir, who is the head of Wisconsin's senator, who's the head of Wisconsin's health committee, and also the head of ALEC's health committee. So we have this, it's sort of like the men from ALEC are all located here in Wisconsin. And what do they get out of this relationship? Well, you know, that's a very interesting question. You know, we've been puzzling about it. But the fact of the matter is that they do have swank resorts. Legislators, I mean, contrary to popular belief, legislators are not making huge salaries, especially legislators across the country that work part-time and sometimes don't get paid at all. So they get a big vacation. They get to bring their kids if they want to. And a lot of this bill is picked up. A lot of this tab is picked up by ALEC, including a few years ago, they had a $250,000 child care tab that was picked up at an ALEC conference. So, you know, in addition to that,
spending a lot on their children.
Yeah, they hobnob with corporations that fund their campaigns. They have actual fundraisers down there. You know, it's a big one, big party, but the people are left out of the party, and we're left out of the conversation.
And the number to join our conversation is 256-2001. My name is Joanne Powers. My guests are Lisa Graves and Mary Botari of the Center for Media and Democracy. And then we're going to go to our next caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. First, I'd like to thank the guests for the important work that they're doing. But largely, I'm interested in knowing how they do their research, where they get the information from. And thank you for the great show. Thanks.
Well, we appreciate your thanks. The fact is that we are making this set of documents publicly available so that people across the country, in Wisconsin and elsewhere, can identify how these bills have perverted, in essence, altered the law in their states. And in this particular case, this set of documents came to us by way of a whistleblower. We spent additional time, obviously, examining them and looking into the bills, in particular here in Wisconsin. That legwork involves a lot of research time of going to the State House here and looking at what has been introduced, because it can be very difficult to search online for bills that were passed a year ago. To try to find those bills, you may not know the bill number. But we think that there are ways now online that listeners can help contribute to this information. We put this information on a wiki, which is like Wikipedia, so that people can add their knowledge, what they're learning, what bills that they find are similar or the same that have been introduced, who introduced them, were they an ALEC member?
Just make sure that ALEC and their PR firms don't get a hold of that wiki, because I'm sure they'll re-edit it lots.
It is a wiki, and so it will have portions that are certainly open to the public. But we are hopeful that people will be engaged and be able to be a community that basically polices against the whitewashing of any such information. And we're certainly working. We're certainly endeavoring to prevent whitewashing of what's been exposed. I think that there's a lot of tools out there for tracking information down about these groups beyond this sort of trove of documents, but it's not easy to do, and it can take a lot of digging electronically and in paper and through paper. So Mary and our team, you know, have gone through those blue books in Wisconsin, the actual physical blue books, to see what legislators were saying about what they were doing with ALEC, because it's certainly not all of them tout publicly their joint role, like Leah Vukmir. She has that joint role, but it's not an ad she runs, saying I have both these hats.
Well, you know, they're a super secret organization like Chaos or SMERSH.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do publicly disclose who their heads of their task forces are and who their board members are, but they don't tell you who all the other members are. And so that's part of the untold story that we're hoping people can help us uncover. Who are the other legislators who have been involved in ALEC, and how have they benefited? Who gave them campaign donations? Were these corporations part of ALEC? We want that story documented. We think that people have a right to know.
All right. And I would like to know a little bit more about the history. Mary, you mentioned them going back to, you know, the 70s here in Wisconsin. I'm wondering, do they have predecessors? Mm-hmm. Are there other groups that were around before, or is this a new relatively new thing in the world of politics.
For this package of materials, John Nichols did a great piece on Alec's voting and democracy agenda, and that's up on the Nation website. And he likes to call them the losers of the 60s and the 70s because, you know, they failed to elect Barry Goldwater. They rolled all their dice on Nixon, and that didn't work out so well. Well, that didn't work out so well. And then they realized they had to get their act together, and they started creating institutions to change public opinion about a variety of issues. So Paul Weyrich, who's a Wisconsinite, helped found ALEC. At the same time, he was instrumental in founding the Heritage Foundation. And at that time, this whole array of institutions sprung up: Heritage Foundation, Cato, Brookings. He was involved in the Moral Majority, and he formed ALEC to fill a specific niche. Not all these institutions are the same. They don't do all the same things. This is the state-level niche. And as they lost power, you know, at different times at the federal level, they put a lot more energy into the state level. And right now we're seeing all this popping in Wisconsin because, you know, Wisconsin has pretty much had power sharing over the years. And now that power sharing is gone. It's like the cork pop, you know, is out of the bottle and all this stuff comes flooding out. So we've documented around 20 bills here in Wisconsin that look a heck of a lot like ALEC bills. And we'll have that expose up tomorrow on our site. Today in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, there is an expose about some of the legislators and some of the bills. So people should check that out online today and in the newspaper tomorrow.
And apparently we've had a caller who is would like me to mention once again what ALEC is. ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. Because they wanted to know what the meaning of that was again.
Well, we also suspect it's Scott Walker's middle name, but we haven't quite tracked that down yet. Our website goes live today.
I was going to guess he was Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Our website today is that we're launching today is alecexposed.org. alecexposed.org. And Wisconsin is full. Madison is full of lots of really smart people. We've got lots of lawyers. We've got lots of graduate students. We've got lots of researchers here, there, and everywhere. And we need their help. This is a giant trove of documents. And, utilities hasn't been analyzed. And lots of environmental sections haven't been analyzed. Broadband section hasn't been analyzed. Wart people. There's aspects of the teachers' union certification issues that haven't been. I mean, there's a whole array of documents and issues there that are really food for fodder for people to dig into.
All right, I want to remember what I was going to ask first. I want to talk a little bit about the back to the propaganda wing of ALEC. Nothing. No offense to anyone named Alex. It's ALEC. The role of the think tank, obviously, you know, think tanks probably sprung up ages ago and pretend to be these academic institutions. But as far as I know, most of them have a clear agenda. And, frequently they churn out some policy statement, which is then picked up by, you know, the pundits and politicians on the on that particular wing of of whatever party they're working for. Can you comment on the role of the think tank?
Sure. Certainly in Washington, where I lived before I moved back to Wisconsin, the think tanks are ubiquitous. They are everywhere. There's the think tank for almost anything in Washington, and they will tell you what to think. They are incredibly influential in Washington. A lot of what they do is produce policy papers about why something is a good idea. They cook the books on statistics and research, and you know, fight things like dealing with climate change, or you know, all the propaganda we're seeing on the budget and on deficits and such, in terms of revenue versus spending by the government. And so there, a lot of the debate in Washington is shaped by these think tanks, and many of these think tanks have former legislators who've left their jobs and gone over there, or they have people like Clarence Thomas's wife over at the Heritage Foundation and other influential people who have these roles. ALEC called itself a think tank in some ways, and they do produce these sorts of policy papers and materials. They're in the midst of trying to roll back the what I would describe as modest changes to the healthcare law.
What are their associations with other think tanks?
Well, so they are connected to other think tanks. One of the think tanks that they're most closely connected with is a group called the Heartland Institute, which is down in Illinois. The Heartland Institute and ALEC have deep roots. They have similar funders, and they have shared a common vision on the climate change debate in particular. And as we and others have well documented, Heartland and its ilk are funded by largely funded by big oil companies, as well as receive large donations from big oil companies, as well as receiving large donations from the foundations related to big oil companies. And so, you know, that's significant. I think actually that's one of the stories here, is that these groups are funded, can be funded by not just corporations, but corporate-funded, CEO-funded foundations. And so it sounds like philanthropy. It's defined as philanthropy under the law, but it's a way for someone like Charles Koch or David Koch to give, to donate millions of money that he might otherwise, I suppose, be taxed on to his own foundation.
And to influence public policy.
And then that foundation donates money to Americans, to, in the case of Charles Koch, donates money to ALEC and other think tanks or other institutions like ALEC. As I said, it's
unique.
It
sounds so incestuous.
I think it is, and I don't want people to feel overwhelmed by it, because it can certainly be discouraging to see what's happening to our democracy. But, you know, if we don't fight back, if we don't stand up, if we don't speak out, they win. And I think that's an intolerable situation.
And now I want to broaden the scope a little bit. Obviously, ALEC is largely, you know, focused on the United States, but it's part of more of a global process, is it not, among there are several countries working to follow the U.S. model to privatize, you know, everything, and to make sure that the, you know, rich don't pay their share of taxes, et cetera, et cetera. And they're working to, you know, there's a collusion among the wealthy class in, you know, across country borders. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, I would. You know, this is Mary. So when we started looking into this project, ALEC Exposed, you know, one of the books I kept thinking of over and over again was Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, because she coined the term disaster capitalism for the sort of rapid fire corporate reengineering of society still reeling from shock. And, you know, it's sort of what we're seeing here in Wisconsin. We had this financial crisis.
They made this financial crisis.
People are trying to convince us that public workers are responsible for the financial crisis and not Wall Street banks. It's sort of insane. But the master of disaster in Naomi Klein's book was Milton Friedman. And Milton Friedman, of course, spread his hyper-privatization agenda around the world through think tanks, through academia, through respected, you know, sources, but he's also one of the founding fathers of ALEC. They get a lot of his inspiration from them. His foundation, Milton and Rose Friedman Foundation, was a real big booster of ALEC in its early years. But my favorite is that Milton said, he had this great quote where he said, "Only in a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change."
Didn't he write Paradise Lost?
"When a crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. And it is our job to be the ideas lying around." And that's exactly what ALEC is. So we have this financial disaster. John Kasich Mitch Daniels goes and gives a speech at ALEC in December of 2008 and says, "Isn't this a great time to shrink government?" And off they go with their marching orders out into these states to shrink government, not to increase spending and employ more people, but to actually go the opposite direction, to harm the American middle class. And they've been successful in doing it.
And I want to know a little bit more about how ALEC has affected foreign policy. But we do have another caller I want to go to first. Go ahead, caller.
Hello there. Yes, this is a great show. This is scary, scary stuff. I just have actually two things. First of all is the comment about fathers having a vision and then, you know, sons carrying it on. Do you think what the real vision is overall is back to a 1950s white Christian conservative kind of a country? And my other question is, you know, is a segue into your next thing you were talking about, is I was wondering how much they're involved in in the Israel thing, as far as kind of a Zionist kind of a thing, or Israel being the chosen people kind of a thing, that it's kind of that two-pronged approach that you so often see in these conservative movements.
Well, that does bring us back to foreign policy. Go ahead.
Well, there is some foreign policy involvement in ALEC. We do, when you go to our website and you see ALEC politicians, you can click on that and you can see some of their friends overseas in different parliaments. You could also see their ALEC alum in the federal government. But his original question was, is this sort of a white male Christian agenda? What was interesting to me is that a lot of the social conservative issues aren't in this pile. There's not a lot about gays that I could find. There's not a lot
abortion.
About there's guns. There's not a lot about abortion that I can find. There's a few pieces, you know, here and there. They've been really focusing on the heart of the matter, which is the boring old taxation stuff and the economic agenda. But there's one area, and that's school choice, where again we come.
But
where,
school choice is an economic issue because it's all about profit.
Well, but it's also all about getting public money to send our kids where we want to and to leave the other kids behind.
Well, the whole point of public education, of course, is to provide, you know, opportunities for everybody, even those who can't afford to go to private institutions. So they want to undermine that.
And they actually say in some of their documents that public education works for everyone. And so this is a problem. I mean, they literally say this. It's sort of like who writes their stuff?
Well, you know, and if people learn stuff, they might not want to work the low-wage jobs that they're offering.
So this is what they're doing in school choice. They're doing a school choice for foster kids, school choice for autistic kids, school choice for veterans kids. You know, they're trying to peel off group after group after group as sort of like an entree group to this privatization, some special little group that's an entree group to this privatization.
They want to give special rights to veterans?
But they want to lift it. I mean, in reality, they want everybody in that group. And who's going to get left behind? Exactly those children. I mean, we're going to see resegregation of special needs kids. It's just going to be a disaster. So, they're in the school choice area, it's a place where you really can sort of see white men in the suburbs really wanting to get their children into, you know, their special schools.
And I think that just to add one thing to what Mary so evocatively said, what they want to, one of the things they want to do is make sure that your tax dollars are subsidizing their private school education. There are bills in there that are not means tested that mean that any student could get, quote, a scholarship regardless of merit, regardless of income, to have fellow taxpayers pay for their kid to go to the private academy of their choice.
Well, aren't these wealthy people in such a position where that's not nearly as much money to them as it is to all of the poorer people in the world? They're more interested in destroying public education than they are in just, you know, the taking that money to send their kids to a private academy. They're not worried about because they have tons of money. They're far more interested in just using that as a tool to destroy public education for others.
I think it's a combination of cheapness, wanting to get as much of the taxpayers to pay for their own things as they can, and also certainly on the part of the Koch brothers and their longstanding agenda, I think, of funding these sort of voucher privatization, profitization efforts. It is to, in essence, dismantle a public school system, which their father said the school books were infiltrated by communists. The NEA was infiltrated. And so there's a long sort of history there of antipathy toward a Supreme Court that would dare to enforce the terms of the 14th Amendment and require that the United States comply with equal protection of the law for our public school students. And so, you know, I think that legacy is present in this current form. But what you see is this long-term agenda. They have a long-term agenda, and they're chipping and chipping and chipping away at it. And where they have this confluence of people like Walker and Fitzgerald and others, they really try to rush through and break through that barricade with incredibly radical ideas, as we've seen.
And we are out of time on the program, but I'd like to thank my guests, Lisa Graves and Mary Botari of the Center for Media and Democracy. Thank you both for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And also I'd like to thank Grania Svensson for engineering and Heather Gribishak for handling the phones. Stay tuned, of course, next for the Insurgent Radio Kiosk, followed immediately by Journeys into Jazz.